"Damn," Sylvia said, jumping to her feet. Mickey didn't move, and we watched as the two men bounded out the door after our mother and tackled her to the ground in the middle of the yard. The driver struggled to hold her while his partner forced her arms into a straitjacket. He then rolled our mother over and he pushed her face into the grass as the other man fastened the back of the jacket. How many people get to say they wore a straitjacket? I imagine that being unable to use your arms would really mess with your balance. If you happen to fall, you're going down like a sack of potatoes. As all of this went through my head, I realized that most kids would be horrified at the sight of their mother being hauled away in a straitjacket. Should I have been crying? As the men escorted our mother to the ambulance, I felt relieved. A car came up the road, and as it approached our yard, it slowed down. The woman in the passenger seat peered out her window, her eyes wide and her mouth hanging open, as she watched our mother, still in her straitjacket, strolling to the ambulance like she was just going out to get the mail. If our mother's arms weren't wrapped around herself, I imagine she would have waved to the passing car.
You know, I understand that this book, Heidi, began as the idea was for a memoir, but you decided to shift to a novel. How did that happen?
Yeah, as you said, the first few drafts were definitely a novel or a memoir. But I was very young when many of the events I wrote about happened, and so I only had snapshots of memories. And so I had to fill in the gaps, and that's when I shifted to a novel. Well, my mother, she played a key role in the book, and because I wanted to explain her actions, I also included a backstory of her time in Germany. It helps explain why a mother would treat her children in such a harmful way. The book is also dual narrative, which I think makes for a more interesting read for the reader. I shifted to a novel because it allowed me to open up the story, and it allowed me to provide an arc and give the story a beginning and an end that I think the readers will find satisfying.
Plus, I think you don't have to remember every detail correctly. And you can always tell family members, "Nah, that's not you. That's fictional."
It does give me an out.
So you've sort of kind of given us a synopsis. Can you round that out for the listener, potential reader, and tell them what the book is about?
Yeah, Chasing North Star. I call it a bittersweet coming-of-age story. There's two time periods. The majority of the book is set in 1970, and it's about a band of siblings trying to survive a mother who suffers from a cocktail of mental illnesses. And back in 1970, mental illness was still something that, we shoved into the corners, and doctors didn't quite know what to do with it other than prescribe handfuls of pills, which sometimes helped and sometimes certainly didn't help. But like I said, it is dual narrative. And while the majority of the book takes place in 1970, which is a kind of a fun, nostalgic look back at those times, it also looks back at my mother's childhood in the 40s in war-torn Germany. And it takes us through her childhood and through the time when she meets a man from the army and travels to America.
And you have this interesting technique that you used, like you said, dual narrative. Mm-hmm. But for the narration that happens in 1970, you use the first person. And for the narration that is in the 1940s, the mother, you use the third person. What was the idea there?
Yeah, the idea for 1970, I went first person, and it's my adult self looking back, but it's narrated in the words of a 9-year-old. And I think what that does, it allows the reader to put themselves in the position of the narrator by going first person. It really puts them in the driver's seat. And because I went that route, when looking back to the 40s and the childhood of the mother who plays a role in the book, I intentionally didn't go first person because I want that to be I want there to be more distance between the reader and the character, because there's a distance between that character and the child later in life.
Mm. You know, I feel like the message of your story is that people are who they are for a reason. And when we remember that, we can be hopefully a little more understanding and even more forgiving. Is that kind of what you're trying to say? Because you're talking about a dysfunctional family, which I think we're pretty much all dysfunctional families to some degree, right?
I've yet to find that normal family. I'll let you know when I do. And while the book is about mental illness, the focus really is on the children of someone suffering from mental illness and how that affects them and how they can take it to the next generation like my mother does, or they can stop it like we do. And like you said, what I hope readers take away from the story is that we're not alone. Growing up as a kid, which I think many kids do, you know, I used to think that we were the only weird family in town, that we were the only dysfunctional family. And I've learned that I'm certainly not alone there. One of the refreshing surprises I've run into is when someone finishes the book, their first response is often, you know, let me tell you about my messed up childhood.
How did your family and friends who have known you for a long time, how do they respond to it? Because I'm sure if they knew you, they recognized that there were some threads of reality woven into that.
You know,
your children, how did they respond to that?
Yeah, you know, it's been eye-opening for my children because I have talked about my grandmother, but certainly not in the detail. So they've learned a lot of things. I recently had a book release party, and one of my friends from high school, you know, when you're a kid, you're self-absorbed and you really aren't paying attention to life other than what's happening and, you know, how it affects you. So while I thought my friends were all, you know, horrified at my mother, you know, they didn't notice. And anyway, at this book release party, a high school friend came up to me and she goes, you know, they just want to give me a big hug and say, oh, I wish I understood all of that when we were kids, which, you know, of course it's not to be expected.
So how did that book release party go? Because that happened in the middle of, actually, what is this, our third surge of COVID?
Oh, my God,
So there's a lot of challenges right now for authors trying to get the word out that, hey, I have a new book. How did you do that? How did that go?
And what a challenge, right? You know, we've shifted. I've had a lot of what were supposed to be book signings and appearances have either been canceled or shifted to online. You know, we've all learned, you know, Zoom's a verb nowadays. But the book release party, what we did very intentionally, we held it at Fricano's restaurant in El Alamo, fittingly enough, because that's where the majority of the story takes place. But what we did is we took a lot of precautions with masks, social distancing where and when we could, and we set it up more as an open house so people could come and go and not feel unsafe. But yeah, you know, it certainly puts a crimp on things. This has changed everyone's life. And, you know, when an author comes out with a book, that's a big deal and that's a big challenge. And this has thrown a whole new challenge. The upside, I hope, to COVID is that perhaps because we are all staying put a little bit more, you know, maybe people are reading a little bit more, and that's a good thing because we sure do need to be supporting our local bookstores.
Always, yeah.
Yeah.
And you chose a press called She Writes Press. Tell us about that.
I did. You know, I joke that writing the book was the easy part, which of course it wasn't. But I have to say that finding a publisher is equally as challenging as getting the book finished. As many writers do, I tried going the traditional route first. And what that means is looking for a literary agent who will represent you to the publishers. And, you know, that's a challenge all in itself. They're generally young and they're looking for books that are captivating to a younger demographic, books that are a series so they can sell more than one. Sci-fi is real big right now, you know, so if you have a book like The Hunger Games and you can promise three books, you know, you're off and running. So it is a challenge when a woman 50 plus writes a book that's based on a memoir and caters to an older woman. So it was hard to go that route. And I did not land a literary agent. And so my next plan was to look at indie publishers, hybrid publishers. And that's what I did. I went to She Writes Press. It is a hybrid publishing company that caters to women. And they also vet you. They don't take just everyone. So I was thrilled that I was accepted to work with them. And it has been a wonderful partnership. And it's, I think, their type of publishing company has allowed people to get published that otherwise probably never would.
What do you mean by hybrid press? What does that mean?
Yeah, you have your traditional publishing companies. And when you work with them, you, of course, don't give them any money. But when you sell a book, your profit is very low because the majority of it goes to the publisher because they're the ones that put all the money into it. And then the bookstore gets their share. And when everyone takes their share, there's very little left. And when you work with a hybrid publisher, you do invest with them. So you're both sharing in the expense, but then you're also sharing in the profit. So when I sell a book, I make a lot more money than if I went with a traditional publisher.
You'll probably also have to put in more elbow grease, though, no?
Absolutely. However, I have learned that, unless you're a celebrity, oftentimes with a traditional publisher, you really don't get a lot of help on that end as well. Today, you more than ever, you can't just be a good writer. You have to be a good writer and you have to be a good marketer because it's all up to you. If you could write the world's greatest novel, but if you don't have those social media platforms, you're going to be dead in the water oftentimes because they want someone that has followers and someone who is active on social media. You got to be working it today. And, as you know that.
Are you planning other events coming up? Anything soon over the holiday season?
I think it's slated for the 1st of December. I will have a fun Zoom appearance with the Kalamazoo Public Library. So we're going to have a lot of fun there. Hopefully that'll be in time for the holidays, so people can buy a book or two.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah.
And I was wondering, too, did you actually go to Ellis Island? And along with that question, I'm wondering that since this is kind of got the roots of a memoir, mm-hmm. if you dug around in memories, but if you also found some surprises while you were doing that.
The surprises, the research I did was basically, talking to my siblings. I'm the youngest of five kids. And just kind of a fun side note, in the book, there's only four children. I started out with all five of us, and my editor said, you gotta get rid of one. There's too many kids here. So
uh-oh, I do that's apologize. A tough one.
Yeah, I do apologize to my brother Fred, who wound up on the cutting room floor.
Or maybe that's a relief. I don't know.
I'm thinking he might be thinking that. It starts out in New York City. And then it takes us back in time to 1970. And then it finishes in New York City. And the reason why we're in New York City is because the narrator and her husband, all grown up, she decides to visit Ellis Island, which, of course, her mother landed on her trip to America and where her dreams, what she had hoped would be her dreams, started out. They have the immigration wall at Ellis Island, and it has its names of all the immigrants that have landed on Ellis Island. And it's really sombering. And to look at it, it's simply magnificent to see all those names because you think about all those people setting foot on American soil for the first time and all the dreams that they had. And you hope that for at least the great majority of them, you hope that they've come true. So it's a good ending or beginning, and it's, I think, an appropriate ending.
We can give a little plug here also. Along with being the author of this book, you're a contributing writer for a local women's magazine. A lot of people may know it as Women's Lifestyle, but they'd recently changed their name, didn't they?
They did. They changed it to Moxie Magazine. And just a fun magazine that caters to women's. It's kind of like a city magazine, but it is catered to women. It's a monthly magazine that you can find in Southwest Michigan at a lot of free places. And you can get it online, and actually they will also, they have free distribution to circulation to your home if you're interested. Nice magazine. I write a column that it's called One Woman's Opinion, and it can range anywhere from, you know, talking about politics to why in the world girls have to dress in pink.
Hear, hear. That's not my favorite color.
Nope. I don't have anything against it. I just don't. It shouldn't be a mandatory color.
Yeah, the pink and the blue. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Heidi. Really appreciate you stopping by to tell us about Chasing North Star.
Thank you. And if I may add, you can order Chasing North Star online, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or anywhere books are sold. And you can keep up with me and my writings at HeidiMcCrary.net and on Facebook at Heidi McCrary Author.